The cottage had never been large, but in the silence, it felt smaller, as though the walls were contracting to conserve heat that wasn't there. Ilse moved through the rooms with the mechanical efficiency of a woman who had performed these motions 1,000 times before, but whose mind was somewhere else, suspended in the gray light of the yard, watching the Baron's riders kick up the dust that hung in the air like a shroud. She started with the kitchen. It was the easiest room to strip because it held the fewest things of value. The iron pot, blackened by decades of smoke, went into the wicker basket. The wooden spoons, smooth as river stones from handling, went in beside it. The tin plates, dented and uneven, followed. She did not look at the hearth. She knew what she would find there. A bed of cold ash, the skeletal remains of the last fire Jaren had helped her build, and the small, charred stick she had used to stir the pot when the soup was too thin. She left it. Some things were too heavy to carry. The smell of the kitchen had always been the strongest damp wool, sour bread, the metallic tang of the well water. Now, with the windows open to the cold, the scent was fading, replaced by the sharp, clean odor of the approaching snow. Ilse paused at the door, her hand on the frame. She remembered the winter before last, when the snow had piled so high against the shutters that she had had to dig her way out with a shovel that had felt heavier than an axe. She remembered the nights when the wind howled like a wounded animal, and she had sat by the fire, listening to Alara breathe, counting the seconds between each inhalation to make sure they were even. Alara. The name was a stone in her throat. She swallowed it down. There was no room for grief in the basket. Grief was bulky. Grief took up space that needed to be reserved for survival. She moved to the bedroom. The pallet was bare. She had stripped the sheets in the yard, shaking them out until the last of the dust drifted away on the wind, then folded them neatly and left them on the bench by the door. The Baron's men could have the linen. They could have the wool blankets, the furs, the heavy quilt her mother had stitched before she died. They could have the house itself, but they would not have the mattress. It was stuffed with straw, hard and lumpy, but it was hers. She rolled it tight, tied it with twine from the spool on the table, and hoisted it onto her shoulder. It was heavier than she expected, or perhaps she was simply weaker than she had been that morning. Her arms trembled, a fine vibration that traveled up from her palms, but she did not stop. She walked to the door, stepped out into the yard, and laid the bundle down beside the horse. The horse, a bay mare with a white star on her forehead, stood patiently, her breath pluming in the air. She had been Uncle Eamon's horse, and then she had been Ilse's, and now, according to the deed Torvin had thrust into her hands, she belonged to the Baron. Ilse had not tried to ride her away. There was no point. The Baron's men were everywhere, their red cloaks bright as blood against the gray landscape, their spears glinting in the weak sunlight. To resist was to invite violence, and Ilse had no appetite for violence today. She had spent her quota of fighting on the road, standing before the fourth waystone with her hands pressed against the cold stone, her will locked against the fracture like a brace against a collapsing wall. She had held. She had won. And the price had been everything she owned. She went back inside. The parlor was the hardest room to leave. It was where Uncle Eamon had kept his books, where Jaren had sat by the fire and spoken of the silence, where Alara had learned to read by tracing the letters in the ledger with her small, dirty finger. The shelves were bare. Ilse had taken the books the night before, stacking them against the wall, but she had forgotten one. It was a small volume, bound in cracked leather, tucked behind the larger ledgers. She pulled it out. It was a prayer book, or perhaps a collection of psalms, the pages yellowed and brittle. She opened it. The handwriting in the margins was her uncle's, precise and angular. "The road is long," he had written, "but the stone remembers." She closed the book. She put it in her satchel. Outside, the wind had picked up, swirling the dust into tight, dancing spirals that caught the light and scattered it like diamonds. Ilse picked up the satchel and the iron pot. She walked to the gate, her boots crunching on the frozen mud. She did not look back at the cottage. The low stone walls stood firm, the thatched roof sagging under the weight of the snow, the door hanging open like a mouth screaming in silence. The urge to turn around clawed at her legs. To run back inside, bolt the door, and hide until the world ended. But the world had not ended. It had merely changed hands. The road stretched before her, cracked and overgrown, disappearing into the hollow where the stones hummed with cold air. She had walked this road 1,000 times in all seasons, in all weathers. She knew every stone, every dip, every rise. She knew where the water pooled in the spring, where the brambles tore at her skirts in the autumn, where the shadows lengthened in the late afternoon, turning the path into a tunnel of gray and gold. She had thought she knew it because she had walked it, but she was wrong. She only knew the surface. She did not know the depth. Jaren had told her that. He had told her that the road was not just stone and dirt, but memory and will, a living thing that fed on attention and starved in neglect. She had not believed him, not fully. Not until the darkness had come, not until the silence had swallowed the birds and the wind and the very sound of her own heartbeat. Now she walked. The mare followed, her hooves clicking softly on the stones. Ilse kept her head down, focusing on the path ahead, on the next step and the next. She did not think about the Baron's keep, looming on the hill like a black tooth against the sky. She did not think about Torvin, standing in the yard with his ledger and his cold blue eyes, telling her that the debt was paid, that the claim was valid, that there was nothing left for her here. She did not think about Alara, safe in the hands of the village women, far to the south, where the road was broken and the darkness could not reach. She thought only of the stones. They were still humming. She could feel it in her teeth, a low, persistent vibration that ran through the soles of her boots and up into her bones. It was the only thing that was hers. The farm was gone, the horse was gone, the cottage was gone, but the stones remained. And as long as they hummed, the road existed. And as long as the road existed, she existed. The hollow opened up before her, a vast, empty expanse of gray grass and black earth. The wind blew through it, carrying the scent of snow and something else, something old and cold and ancient, like the breath of a buried thing. Ilse shivered. She pulled her cloak tighter around her shoulders and quickened her pace. The first waystone was still there, standing at the start of the road, solid and patient. She passed it without touching it. She did not need to, she knew it was there. She could feel its presence, an anchor in the shifting landscape. She kept walking. The second waystone was gone. Only a jagged stump remained, splintered by iron wedges, looking like a broken bone jutting from the earth. Ilse looked at it for a moment. She remembered the day Torvin had struck it, the sound of the hammer echoing through the hollow, the shock that had rippled through her like a physical blow. She had stood there, helpless, watching the stone crumble, knowing that she was losing something irreplaceable, something that had held the world together for centuries. She had not cried then, she would not cry now. The third waystone was also gone, erased from the earth as though it had never been. Only a scar of disturbed soil marked its place, a dark patch in the gray grass that looked like a wound. Ilse felt a pang of loss, sharp and sudden, like a knife twisting in her gut. But she pushed it down. There was no room for loss, only for survival. The fourth waystone was ahead, gleaming in the distance like a shard of ice. It was the last one, the final barrier, the end of the road. Ilse felt a surge of fear, cold and sharp, tightening her chest. She had stood before it 3 days ago, her hands pressed against its surface, her will locked against the fracture, holding back the darkness while the world burned around her. She had won, but at what cost? She reached the stone. It was colder than she remembered. The hum was louder here, a jagged, strained whine that made her teeth ache. She placed her hand on it. The cold bit through her glove, seeping into her skin, into her bones, into her blood. She closed her eyes. She listened. The hum was changing. It was dropping in pitch, smoothing out, becoming steadier. It was no longer the frantic vibration of a thing fighting for survival. It was the calm, resonant tone of a thing at rest. The fracture was still there, a hairline crack running across the face, no wider than a knife blade, but it was no longer spreading. It had stabilized. The road was broken, but it was intact. It would hold. Ilse opened her eyes. The sky was darkening, the clouds gathering overhead, heavy and low. The snow was coming. She turned away from the stone, picked up her satchel, and led the mare north. The road stretched ahead, empty and desolate, disappearing into the twilight. There were no footprints in the dust, no tracks in the mud, no sign of life, just the stone, the wind, and the silence. Ilse walked into it, her steps steady, her head high, her heart a closed fist. She did not look back. Behind her, the cottage sat in the yard, a low stone hut swallowed by bramble and thyme, filled with dust and the smell of dried herbs and old paper. The door was open. The fire was out. The ledger lay on the table, its pages blank, waiting for a hand that would never return. The wind blew through the doorway, stirring the dust, scattering the ashes, erasing the traces of the life that had been lived there. The snow began to fall, soft and silent, covering the yard, the road, the stones, erasing the world in white. Ilse Vane walked north, into the cold, into the dark, into the silence. And the stones hummed. Low, steady, unbroken. But there. Always there. Even when no one was left to hear it. Even when the memory of the keeper had faded into the dust. Even when the road was forgot. The stones remembered. And that was enough. For now. For tonight. For the long, cold night that was coming. Ilse did not slow her pace. She did not falter. She kept walking, her boots crunching on the frozen stones, her breath pluming in the air, her eyes fixed on the horizon where the sky met the earth in a line of gray and gold. The mare followed, patient and silent, her hooves clicking softly on the path. Ahead, the hills rose up, dark and imposing, blocking the way, hiding the destination. Ilse could not see what lay beyond them. She wondered if there was a village, a road, a home. She feared Alara was not safe, that Jaren had not reached the north, that the darkness had followed them south. She only knew that she had to keep moving. To stop was to die. To stop was to let the cold in. To stop was to remember. And she could not remember, not yet. So she walked. And the road carried her. And the stones hummed. And the snow fell. And the night came. And Ilse Vane, keeper of the road, walked into it alone, but not lost. Because she knew the way. She had walked it for 26 years. She had walked it for her uncle. She had walked it for her daughter. She would walk it for the stones. Until the end. Or until the beginning. It was hard to tell the difference anymore. The wind howled, a lonely, haunting sound that echoed through the hollow, bouncing off the stones, rising up into the sky, disappearing into the clouds. Ilse did not flinch. She had heard worse. She had heard the silence. She had heard the darkness. She had heard the song. This was just wind. Just cold. Just snow. Just the road. She pulled her cloak tighter. She quickened her step. She walked into the dark. And the stones hummed. Low. Steady. Unbroken. There. Always. There.